You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Today's episode is brought to you by The Bike Riders, a new film from Jeff Nichols starring Jodie Comer, Austin Butler, and Tom Hardy. Inspired by true events, The Bike Riders follows Benny, played by Austin Butler, the newest member of Midwestern motorcycle club The Vandals, led by the enigmatic Johnny, played by Tom Hardy. Critics are calling it electrifying, stunning, exhilarating, powerful, and the godfather of biker movies. Experience The Bike Riders on the big screen this summer. Now playing only in theaters. Visit BikeRidersMovie.com to get tickets now.
Ayo, salute people who don't got moves but still dance. You know what I'm talking about? They put their heart and soul into it. In a way where you can't even say, like, yo, that's embarrassing. You're just like, nah, man, they're out there cooking the best they know how to cook. You know what I'm talking about?
they do their best. What do you want?
I did a comedy show at City Winery, and the room next to it had this, like, the best I can explain it was like a Jimmy Buffett type band. It wasn't country music, but it definitely wasn't hip hop. You know what I mean?
Cheeseburger in paradise. Yeah, it was like, how do you dance to that?
It was a lot of air guitar. There was a lot of air guitar in the audience. A lot of air guitar. But there was a couple people who, you know, ain't really had to move in the last few years, but they felt something. You know what I mean? And they got up. And part of me wanted to, look, there's a lot of elbows. There was a lot of elbows, right? I'm thinking, is this lady in traffic?
Are we doing chicken dance? Yeah. What are we?
Is this lady in a, is she shopping on Black Friday? You know? But I wanted to, and I didn't. You know why? Because she was putting her heart and soul into it. Shouts to you. Salute to all the non-dancers who still go out there and dance. They put up a sweat. They get a sweat going. You know what I'm talking about?
Exactly.
Listen, there's something to be said for just joy, amassing joy.
You got to get it out your body. You know what I mean? Just because it don't go to the beat. Any of the beats here, you know what I mean?
Let it go, bro.
It's not my fault. It's not your fault, and it's not my place to say, enjoy yourself. Ladies and gentlemen.
It's the Cooligans, buddy.
Ah, my name is Alexis Guerreros. As you can tell, there is no Christian here today.
Yes.
So may the mayhem ensue.
I was going to say, this is going to be an interesting episode of the Cooligans without Christian here.
In fact, to try to limit the mayhem, but also create some of her own. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to hear nice and loud applause. You better park your car and put your hands together for the one, the only Christine Cooper, everybody.
Actually, somebody recently promoted me of the Cooligans fandom.
Really?
Yeah. I saw it the other day. Apparently, I've been promoted to Queen of Blangola.
Let's go.
Whereas
Let's
previously, go. I was the Minister of Defense.
Yes.
As well as the Chancellor of Education of Blangola.
Yeah.
So thank you for that. But where is my tiara?
You wear a lot of hats here in Blangola. Let
me tell you. You've got the flag. You've got the flag right behind you.
The budget is small. I don't want people coming for the nobility.
Stop spreading lies. The budget is infinite. What are you talking about? We got nothing but money.
Okay, for me, the budget is small.
Remember, our school system comprises solely of teaching kids how to be credit card scammers. All right?
Committing fraud. Fraud 101. That's the name
of
our
school. No, it's not called fraud here. You guys got to switch
it's business.
And of course, Miguelito's here with us. Shouts to Miguelito.
I'm here. Yes.
You guys are going to be annoyed by all the button pressing. In fact, Miguelito, why don't you hook us up a little bit with the first topic?
Yes, let's go. Let's bring it in. We got a lot of soccer to talk about. Obviously, we have two Arsenal fans in the studio today. So we're starting with Arsenal versus Man City. Biggest game of the season so far. A lot of people have been saying, definitely not the most exciting game this season so far. What'd you guys think?
I completely disagree. My heart was stopped for 95 minutes.
I was stressed. I was stressed before, during, after even. For me, it was a tactical game, right? It was chess more than it was football. Arsenal executed on the plan that they had, which is atypical from their usual plan of play. And what I can say for that there is they executed to plan, right? You have an insurmountable task of meeting City at their home, where they also managed to keep them goalless, which is nearly impossible.
57 games in a row.
57 straight matches.
That's crazy talk. We're talking October 2021.
Yeah. And you know what? Like,
They remember also, October 2021, y'all?
That was a tough time.
Huh? It was a tough time.
I'd rather not remember.
I was wearing a mask inside my house.
Alexis was dancing with toilet paper on TikTok.
Oh, no.
Yes, literally. Yeah, I was showing full thigh on the internet. Yeah, it was a weird time.
You had the thigh meat out. Oh. You were like, you know what? Times are hard, dude.
I almost went to OnlyFans or the Latin version, OnlyFlans. I don't know if you guys have ever been on that. Check it out.
I'll check it out. Maybe there's some other recipes on there.
My wife watched that the first time she saw it. She goes, "You're gonna allow them to put that on the internet?" And then Christian, by the way, he blurred the entire bottom half. I go, "That is so much worse. I look like I'm spread eagle on the toilet." Like, yeah, that is worse. He goes, "You don't care about your thighs?" I was like, "I do not care at all." And my wife saw it when it was finally revealed, and she goes, "Well, you have no cellulite." I was like, "I'm too fat for cellulite, Dave." Also,
like,
the hair.
Look how silky smooth my thighs are.
The hair and the random bruises distract.
That clip definitely got the thigh meat bump.
Yes. To this day, I still will get screen caps of it showing up in like Slack channels. Mm-hmm. When people guess to have the word toilet comes up, they do that. But back to the Arsenal versus City match.
Yeah.
The one thing I think that I take away from it was, if you were to tell me at the beginning of the season that Arsenal is going to walk out 9 matches left, having taken 4 points from Liverpool and 4 points from City, I would shake your hand so fast to say yes to that deal. I don't care what the games look like. I don't care if there was deflections. I don't care if everyone on City's team got the flu the day before the game and it was a bunch of kids. I don't care how that happens. You take that deal.
Yes. No, I agree with you. I think that there's obviously a different set of ways that we can dice up how this match played out.
Mm-hmm.
One, it went to plan. Arsenal were successful, right? Now, would I say, one as a fan, but just also objectively, that they could have done better in their execution? Absolutely. They could. There were moments where they were sloppy, where they were running over each other, where they wanted to give me a small cardiac bump dribbling out of their own box, maybe haphazardly.
Oh, I mean, clear it! I was yelling that a lot.
I was unwell for a chunk of it, but they got the job done, right? Mm-hmm. So, like, result achieved. Now,
make no mistake, you also would agree with me, I think, the draw is a win for Arsenal and a loss for City.
Yes.
100%. Okay.
Because here's the thing now, right? And this, for me, is more of an indicator of what's actually transpiring is City have not beaten any of the teams in the top five this season.
No.
And so, to me, that reflects a lot of their health and robustness as a club that has been feared across the board in the Premier League.
Right.
Now, is it Liverpool's title to lose? I would say yes, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're the driver's seat.
As long as they continue the way that they have been and they seem fairly confident, I think they also have in their back pocket that they do want to do this for Klopp and send him off well.
For sure.
There is, of course,
I'm saying, Arteta, tell us you're leaving. But, just say you're leaving
honestly,
at the end of the season.
I'll cry. I'll be inconsolable
and
for
so
a bit.
Will the players, and they will play so hard.
Yeah, but
then when he does like the Leonardo DiCaprio in Wolf of Wall Street, I'm not leaving. You guys will be. Back.
You know what? You know how you do it. You know how you do it because it's England. This is a pretty simple way to do this. Just say, you know what? I love these fans too much.
Yeah,
I can't leave.
For sure.
And then everyone will be like, he must mean that. No Facts. One's ever played games.
Not with English soccer, man.
My favorite post is actually the Pep's quote to the reporter asking, like, you know, how do you sort of mitigate a low block? And he's like, I don't know, like potentially like murder.
Kill someone was his answer. Potentially. Yeah.
But hypothetically speaking.
Hold on.
Okay, hypothetically, allegedly, in a court of law, in the event that I ever have to mitigate a low block and I happen to maybe possibly unalive someone, that it's the Pep Guardiola defense that I was merely being the best footballer I could be. But he's right. And that's something that Arsenal executed on.
I just picture you on Sunday League coach, like, you know, player coach is being like, guys, it's Pep Guardiola time. And then one of the players is like, oh, are we going to do tiki taka? And you just hand someone a knuckle duster.
Are we changing up the back line? No, we're doing murder.
No, Christine's like, Christine's like, I sharpened this toothbrush on the pavement. What?
We're resourceful, yeah, okay? Yeah. Like, you don't really want to mess with a New Yorker or Italian New Yorkers.
Yeah, facts. Facts.
But I have to commend Arsenal's back line for sure.
Incredible. Saliba, man of the match.
You know what? Even in the midfield, outside of, I'd say, Jorginho did not have his best match. I do attribute that to not giving the Italia matches shirt that he should have. Sometimes karma does come back quicker than others. But they really did a good job of not letting City draw them out to kind of carve space behind that low block, which they could have a lot of times. You want to take the bait.
Also, how many teams have tried a low block against City and failed miserably?
Mm-hmm. Right.
This is the best defensive team showing you why they are.
Skying a ball. You absolutely.
Nutmegging himself. You negated
De Bruyne. Mm-hmm. And these are some of the most brilliant pro footballers we have present day. I think they did a really, really, really exquisite job of doing that. Now, could they have done a little bit better? Of course. Would I like to see a really dominant Arsenal that can manage to get that done and then also flip into like a beautifully executed counter? Sure.
Of course.
But when you're using all of your energy to play that defensively compact like that, mm-hmm. it's reasonable to see what we saw, which was a little bit of slip-ups where it's like you don't have anybody making a run with you. You're kind of an island on the own, mm-hmm. on your own as you're trying to make a run is, oh, there's a chance of a counter, but it fizzles out in the midfield because you just can't get the ball up that high. In the end,
those things still worked in our favor. Obviously, the inability to clear the ball and stuff, it was a little bit of a high wire act at mm-hmm. moments. And I think on both sides, you could say that. To me personally, I think if I look at the way Pep Guardiola, you know, sort of got his team set up, Gvardiol down the left just felt like such a mistake to me. In the end, I think it switched up. Obviously, when Ake goes out and Rico Lewis comes in, great name, Rico Lewis, by the way, sounds like a rapper. I think
Foden on that left flank actually did a lot of heavy lifting.
Yeah. But Gvardiola, Arsenal were leaving him alone. Like, go ahead, try. I mean, you're a center back with the beard of an assassin from a Taken movie, and you think I'm gonna be scared of you on the touchline? Yeah. That's not happening.
I mean, I think that it speaks a lot to also just like the respect that Pep has for this Arsenal side that his subs were purely attacking when he finally made them.
He was going for it.
He was literally like, Doku, go.
Yeah.
Like, let's see what we can
Thank
do.
Thank God Doku can't go. Oh, my God.
Doku, whatever you do,
and
don't go.
Did you see him yelling at Grealish at the end of the match?
Yeah. And that was the thing. It's like, you have Doku and Grealish to pull on off the bench, mm-hmm. and you still, they mitigated that entire attack.
Yeah. I mean, and this is a team that got dusted 4-1 last year in this match at the end of the season, which only helped the capitulation of Arsenal last season. I think if you ask Mikel Arteta, some of the things that you wanted to fix in the offseason, right? Mm-hmm. In the summer, he goes out and he says, you know what? We're not good enough off the ball. He gets players that are really good off the ball. Probably one of the best players off the ball in Declan Rice in the league. He goes and gets Kai Havertz.
Oh, and he had a game. I feel
what
like...
What a game. I know people were saying it wasn't the best game I've seen from him.
But I think Declan Rice, also Odegaard, were great in the midfield. I have no complaints about them.
None.
I think that...
Even Jorginho. Not the most effective. He's a little slow, but he put himself in good positions. He yelled. He was constantly checking. I love the fact that Declan Rice just shadowed De Bruyne wherever he went, constantly looking back, seeing where De Bruyne was. It was absolutely incredible. It's like, to me, it was when I look at it, look, it's not the style I want. I hate when the goalkeeper kicks the ball long. Play out of the back, please. It was so boring.
Maybe I'm a little bit of a hater, but I still am not on board with the whole Raya thing.
I'm like, fully on board. But you've seen.
I just feel like very okay, but for me does not spark any sort of like, oh my God, this is what we need.
Isn't that kind of a good thing out of a keeper though?
I don't know. I feel like in the world of like excellent world-class keepers, Arsenal, a big side, right? Mm-hmm. You would want somebody that could essentially be sort of this franchise keeper that can anchor.
You don't
that.
See that at all at Orion?
I just don't. I mean, even
is
yesterday.
Is it because he had such a tall task replacing Aaron Ramsdale that you think, he's only done marginally better?
And I'll absolutely identify that I do have some subjective leanings and that I did really like Ramsdale. He endeared himself to Arsenal and to some of the fans. And I did think that maybe it was too quick to pull the plug on him for me. But every once in a while, Raya, just even playing the ball out of the back, some of the way that he like mitted the one ball yesterday that was like, pull it in for the love of God. I just, there's
he
certain
did get
things
to
that
it,
he did. It's just that we don't need that. And granted, congrats on the clean sheet, but things that just make me have this sort of like shaken confidence in him.
Yeah. I will say, I don't know that he's presented himself as the best goalkeeper of all time in his time.
No, I just,
but
he
has an upgrade
have
over
like
Ramsdale.
That, I feel like he doesn't have that coolness to him.
Yeah.
And I like to have like a very unshakable keeper.
That I thought you meant like you want him to wear like shades.
I mean, that's it. Like if he can have
a mane that's like pibe or something
that like adds flair.
Yeah, give me something like, generational, not talent. Haircut.
I need vibes.
Yeah, give me a mullet, Raya.
Come on, everybody's got that Euro mullet now.
Give me something.
Fox, I have a question for you guys as Arsenal fans though, purely as from like a fandom perspective, because Arsenal is not really this team that's ever been known for being like defensive, lock the door down. Even though back in the day it was
1-0 to the Arsenal, 1-0.
Okay, but I mean, it's been a while.
Yeah, it's been a while.
Was there anything missing from the performance for you guys, or were you guys just like the entire time thinking, whatever we have to do, let's get the result out of this game?
I think pretty quickly I decided after watching Kivior, who I, you know, for me, tactically, I understand why you put Kivior in, but he is so afraid to pass the ball forward. He creates such a black hole to the point where I feel like City knew that pretty quickly and was like, if he gets the ball, that's a press for a trigger, a trigger for a press. If he roams, give him all the space to roam forward, because once he does, he's a little bit sloppy and he's a little bit worried. For me, I would have changed that. I would have maybe, you can't bring in Yuri and Timber, but maybe you can bring in Zinchenko, who I know has issues when he plays against City because they know him so well. But instead of maybe having him overlap, maybe he sort of camps out a little bit. It's something different than what I saw from Kivior, even though he's played really, really well the last few matches. And I completely understand why he gets to start. And I probably still would have started him until I saw that, that how just how he hasn't really developed the ability to hold the ball and bring and move forward with it. That maybe is the one thing, but outside, once I saw that, I was like, bro, if we walk out of here with a draw, especially a 0-0 draw, not like we had to score some late crazy goal to secure a draw. We didn't let them get anything. I think they ended the match with like a 1.7 XG. But for the majority of the match, it was below one.
Yeah.
They were pressuring him. I think they were Arsenal were at the half run by 0.01.
Like 2-1 for shots on target all in one game finish, which is still pretty insane. It's not like you were getting these exciting moments outside of maybe like really impressive defensive displays. And like with Kivior, like I love his ability to close down.
Yeah.
And
great defender.
Right. Like, and I will take that any day. Knowing that, yes, there are some deficiencies there, but you also have to trust in the rest of the back line because they will. And not to mention, like, he's got help on that left flank. And the way that they were playing so compactly, like, even if you had to pull from, like, Declan Rice to sort of fix that side.
Right.
It was doable.
Personally, for me, I do like the idea of a 3-5-2 with this team. Having Saliba, Gabby, and Kivior as your three center backs. You've got Ben White as your winger. Which I know people are like, what about Saka? Bring Saka a little bit more central, have him next to Declan Rice and Martin Odegaard. And on right, you can have Martinelli. And up top, you can have Gabriel Jesus and Havertz. And I know that's
totally doable.
I think it's doable. I'm not saying that should be the main option, but have that as an option. We can overload, but still be super defensive if we need to be. Personally, for me, I mean, there were moments where we had six at the back during this match. It's crazy.
Yeah. Lock it down if you're going to lock it down.
Whatever. We got a point. Only thing that sucks is that, you know, Liverpool are playing nobody. I think they play Sheffield 9 times in the next nine matches.
The luck of the draw, right? When they get those schedules out and you just start sweating profusely because you're like, oh, they're playing people like relegation zone or worse like the rest of the season. Yeah, it's kind of brutal.
Well, the odds now are, I think, Arsenal, if I'm not mistaken, right, 18%.
I'll check on DraftKings. I mean, what do you guys think about the title race just in general? You said, Christine, that you think Liverpool is, or who said they were Liverpool was the favorites?
I mean, they have to.
I mean, they are. Okay. They are. They're in first place with their own destiny. I don't think anyone would disagree with that statement. I don't think it's incendiary at all.
No, for those listening who don't know this, neither one of the three teams, Liverpool, City, or Arsenal, play each other anymore.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So, yeah, so Liverpool literally hold all the keys. The only teams that play all three are Tottenham, Wolves, and Aston Villa.
Yeah. I mean, on DraftKings, it's pretty close. Liverpool is plus 120, Man City's plus 190, and Arsenal's plus 250. They're really disrespecting you guys, putting City. I guess that could have to do with the schedule.
You'd have to consider them third best based on experience and history.
Right. But historically, right now, I think that in terms of setting betting lines, I think that's accurate.
That's true.
Put your money on Arsenal, though. It's good money. And again, just give the children of Blangola your credit card number and your last 4 digits.
It goes to education. Yeah.
How dare you say no to the queen of Blangola?
So coming back stateside from England to MLS, we had a crazy weekend of matches. Inter-Miami not looking particularly impressive without Messi again. LAFC kind of a shocking result, I guess, despite the red card, I would say, at Colorado, you know. I feel like those were kind of the two biggest results. What are you guys thinking from the weekend of MLS?
Dude, I agree. I mean, Colorado being in seventh place right now with, you know, the rough seasons they've had in the past, mm-hmm. they're spending money. They went out. They go get Zach Steffen. You know, I, obviously you guys know this stuff, but Sammy Vines, you know, Georgi Mihailovic, who, you know, look, I said this on the show this morning. I said it's never a good sign when you spend millions of dollars on someone who really couldn't get a start in a, you know, and not one, not the biggest team in Eredivisie. You know what I mean? Mm. He was over at AZ Alkmaar, clearly not getting on the team sheet often or not getting starts often. That's not great. You want to spend money on someone who's getting minutes, but maybe, you know, wants a change of pace or maybe a different level. They're younger and a different level. Georgi Mihailovic, if you can check how old he is, I believe he's in his 26, 27.
I'll look it up.
To me, it was
25. Normally, he's 25.
So normally that would be a bad buy. But here's why I think he was a good purchase. Because he had been so excellent in MLS in the past. He looked great in Montreal. He looked great before that. And he showed that he knows, he understands this league, and he understands how to win in this league. And I think Colorado, for as much as we could say in the past, they hadn't spent a lot of money, and they really didn't want to invest in the team. And again, Stan Kroenke, same Arsenal owner. Mm. They did it this year. They went out and got Zach Steffen, who seems to be starting to come back into form. Mm-hmm. Georgi Mihailovic starting to find, you know, great final goal to get the draw. I mean, that to me, was it a draw or a win?
No, they won.
They won. 3-2. Sorry. They scored. They put it on. They were down. I believe they were down 1. 2-1.
Yeah, they were down 1-0, then went down 2-1 and had two late goals from Mihailovic.
So I'm talking about Georgi Mihailovic with the brace at the end to win it, not draw it.
I mean, I have questions, because why do you think at 25 he'd be a bad signing for MLS?
Because you don't want to bring in someone who's not really able to break through at AZ Alkmaar. You want, to me, AZ Alkmaar is like the step after MLS, but really it's just a little bit more eyes on you. Mm. You know, Eredivisie, they don't really defend. You're an attacking midfielder. It's a really good opportunity for you to shine. I think where AZ Alkmaar, you would impress me is if, you know, you were putting up Josie Altidore numbers goals-wise. I think he hit like 30, if I'm not mistaken, while he was there. That, to me, is where you start to impress, and then maybe you get another opportunity at a better league. To me, Eredivisie, at that level, of AZ Alkmaar's level right now, is pretty close to what you can do in MLS. Like, to shine in MLS, to me, would tell me you should be able to be effective at AZ Alkmaar versus
I don't
fail.
Know. I feel like there's certain nuances across leagues that certain players thrive and otherwise don't. So sometimes
right.
I feel like
there's
MLS,
so much more that goes into it.
Yeah, introduces a new avenue for some of these players that maybe couldn't get their footing yeah. in their prior league, especially when it's just like really reasonable scouting.
Right.
And you're like, okay, like we're going to go I mean, to say that, you know, even when you look at some of like Eastern European scouting, and I feel like there's trends that swing, right? Where all of a sudden, like you're filtering through like Georgian leagues and lower divisions,
yeah, yeah, yeah,
like
yeah.
that, where you literally unearth a diamond, which is great. I don't know.
Look
I feel
up
like
a player, there's like no vowel for the first like yeah. 2 letters. Name. You're like, damn, man.
You're like, Zimmer, like,
Demetrius, gosh.
Bro, I think this is a zero, not an O. You know, you're doing one of those.
Kazakhstan Premier League, bro. Yeah,
yeah.
What is
but
that?
In terms of Colorado, yeah, like, I feel like prior seasons, they certainly fly under the wire because they don't do anything splashy, flashy.
No. And those fans deserve something.
Of course they do.
Up the pits.
But what I'm interested in here is like maybe for someone like Zach Steffen, mm-hmm. being at Colorado could sort of reinvigorate his career and especially
perfect
put him back into
him.
The conversation
perfect
in terms
move.
Of national team.
Yeah.
Because
maybe not just yet, but at least at the very least gets him back into playing regularly. And clearly there was a lot happening from, you know, he spoke very openly about not getting on the World Cup squad, how it affected him mental health-wise.
Yeah.
Having a really rough go of it over in Europe. And presumably he moves to Europe for the opportunity to play in that World Cup to show that ambition that Greg Berhalter wants. Doesn't work out. But what we could all sit here and say is this was, at the time when he was at Columbus, this was one of the best shot stoppers in the league. Mm-hmm. Certainly the best penalty goalkeeper against penalties in the league. This was someone who we all looked at and said, yeah, 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 I could see the signs that he's going to be a great goalkeeper. Goes to Europe. It starts to work out a little bit, but then certainly it doesn't. And we saw development. Charlie in particular mentioned, you know, he spends a season at City, even though he's not starting, all of a sudden he's better with the ball at his feet. Mm-hmm. He's developing those extra skills that you want, especially if you're the national team coach. And this also brings a big, you know, shines a light on a bigger subject, which is for the first time in my lifetime, the U.S. are not deep at goalkeeper.
Mm-hmm. No.
Where in the past it was such a position of strength.
Think about how dominant they were always in that position, especially.
For sure.
Bro, Tony Meola, mm-hmm. Tim Howard, Brad Guzan, Brad Friedel. You're talking about elite. Who's the other dude? The bald. I mean, there was a lot.
I mean, that's the prerequisite for U.S.
I was
going to
say, that's
literally
the entire
list. Are you
list
bald? Are you like 6'5"? Are you good with your hands?
His last name, I think, started with a K. My brain is absolutely not remembering him. He played in the Premier League, if I'm not mistaken.
I'll look it up.
Okay.
You keep going.
But nonetheless, how am I forgetting this guy's name? I picture his face.
Yeah, it happens all the time to me. Where I'm like, my brain
Casey
is
Keller. Casey Keller.
There we
Casey
go.
Casey Keller. Looks like he played a dad in movies. That's what I was going to say. Casey Keller. These are incredible goalkeepers. Goalkeepers that were so good that people in Europe showed a little bit more respect to the American player. Probably at the level we are now, obviously that doesn't happen as much. But back then, there was certainly a little bit of a stigma. Not when it came to goalkeepers. And that came from all those guys I mentioned. And now, all of a sudden, goalkeepers, not a position where we're thriving.
Right.
And it's a little worrisome in the end.
I mean, I think all in, if we're going to have a conversation just high level about the state of the U.S. men's national team, mm-hmm. is that there's an overwhelming number of players that are not starters that are playing abroad or elsewhere that just don't have the minutes.
Yo, say Gio Reyna's name, dude. Just
very,
say
very
his name.
Atypical. Like, listen, he's played like a sitcom length minute.
Yeah,
which
he
is
did
crazy.
Play the last game. I'm gonna
and
pull
I,
up how many
I
minutes.
I kind
though.
Of thought that that's what would happen when he went to Nottingham. It's just that's the nature of the game, right? Like you are going to compete.
For
your
sure.
minutes. That's there's no question.
Especially
of that.
In the Premier League.
And right. And it
the
doesn't
kid
matter.
Got 30 minutes last match.
Okay, so now we have a
draw.
Full hour. We're not at a full length feature film yet, but we're beyond
go.
Sitcom. But
let me hold on to make your point a little bit better. Let me give you
talk,
the last four matches before that in the Premier League. Or one is an FA Cup. He played 1 minute in an FA Cup match. Played 9 minutes against Aston Villa. He played 17 against Newcastle, and he played 12 minutes against Bournemouth. Now, all I want to say is, let me tell you, of all those matches, the one where he played 12 minutes, they drew. The rest of them were losses. But all of a sudden, he plays 30, and they draw against Crystal Palace. So what does that tell you? The more minutes you play Gio Reyna, the better your team is.
Yeah, the more likely you will not maybe lose. I don't know. No, I don't think there's a correlation yet, but I digress. I just think that the U.S., in the grand scheme of things, we have far more players as a I feel like we could say it's a soccer country. It's fine, right? Like,
yeah.
As one of the larger nations with soccer as its focus, in contrast to others, our peers, which I'd say like England, France, or otherwise.
Where soccer's the main sport.
Right. they aren't calling up players like that.
No.
You know, and I don't feel like we're not quite at
Hold
the
on,
level
their number
of
one
like,
is Jordan Pickford, and while he's starting every game, I wouldn't say he's on a good team.
No, but I'm going to say that they're playing more. Right. We have a bigger pool of players that are not regularly playing, regularly starting, that we're still consistently calling up for national team duty. And I feel like that opens the question to like, hey, who else should we be looking at if they're not playing?
This brings up a good point.
With that being said, too, this isn't a knock on the players that we have in camp at all. I think that the quality of players has improved.
Give me an idea. And obviously, this is hypothetical. What would you say is if we made a change today, in the way we develop players, how long before we think that would come to fruition on the national team level for men and women, boys and girls?
Okay. If
10
if
years?
We, perhaps. What I'll say is, and I can probably juxtapose this, if you can follow my train of thought, with the way the women's program's gone, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you look at it in the inverse, right? The U.S. women have been absolutely dominant, Goliaths, for decades, right? And it was because we had made investments into our women's side, and
Title
they won,
19.
Right? Now, when I say that, make no mistake, the investments hadn't been grand, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But in contrast to the other countries and nations
we
had,
grading on a curve,
it was
we're
still
dropping bills.
Significant, right, okay? And the problem, in my opinion, with the women's program was that we coasted for far too long because they knew they could.
We didn't keep
without
up
having
with
to reinvigorating the program, without having to invest more money. they continued to win. And so you got what you got without having to do much more.
Right.
Now, with incremental spending and improvements across the board for nations like England, like France, and we can acknowledge that England still have the issue present day with, you know, women weren't able to play football in gym class.
They're still not. Completely.
So
ridiculous.
Acknowledging that, right? And I don't, because I don't want to give too much credit in progress, right? Those countries that minimally invested have now risen to the level where they're eclipsing the U.S. women's side, where we have more competition. Mm-hmm. So, and I'd say that that's only been within less than 10 years. If you do the same on the men's side, and I do agree with you, maybe a decade, maybe more, you may see that yield within a decade's time, but they need to get very serious about what they want and have a direction, not just, hey, this guy has an accent, let's hire him. He probably knows better for the U.S. Right. men's national team.
So here's why I said that, and you took it to a much more data-filled and serious
than
what I was going to do.
I forgot we're supposed to be funny.
No, the Kooligans, Christine.
But let me explain why. If in 10 years, we're talking about the two World Cups away, right? Two and a half World Cup cycles, right? One of the things that makes the U.S. men's national team so great, and I don't know that this is the equivalent on the women's national team just yet, but on the men's national team, it has been going out and finding players who have some type of connection to the U.S., typically a serviceman dad, right? Especially when it comes to Germany. Or maybe they were born in the U.S. and the family moved elsewhere, like in the case of Ferrer and Balogun. But a lot of the times, it comes from American dudes going out to Europe and having a baby. Okay. So here's my plan.
I don't know where you're going. We have our naval base, footballers. We have. It's true.
No, hold on. Here's my plan.
Here. Give me.
We need to send the dudes out there and start fucking again, right? That's what I'm trying to say.
I knew that's where this was going, and I was hoping
you wasn't
going.
Christy Kupo's thinking too data, too facty. We got to get banging again, dude.
I'm too sober for that.
We got to make American tourism great again.
Which countries are we going to? You got it. What's like the...
Who's leading the pack right now?
France?
If we're doing a trip to France, I'll volunteer.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So we've got fluffers on deck.
Je ne parle pas français, mais je comprends.
Bro, this is going to be so much easier than I imagined already, now that I know that I have the queen of tourism.
Oh my God, I'm getting promotions left. Wait, is this a demotion at this
Multiple
point?
Multiple hats.
I have too many hats to wear, my friends. I'm going to need a tiara.
That's what we got to do. Who's great? Now, look, France, that's an easy job. England, I'm sorry, fellas, you guys are going to have to sacrifice for this
man.
Nation.
Oh, man, what are you doing?
You're going to have to sacrifice for this nation, this great nation. Do you want us to win a World Cup or not?
We need world-class defenders, so perhaps Italia is,
somewhere
we need to.
Get out to Italy.
We don't have nearly enough Italian-American national team players.
That's true. Imagine we had like a Tommy DeVito on like the Italian national team. That would
and
be
also
electric.
we got to do a little extra work in Italy, because sometimes they still go play for Italy. Okay, I'm talking to you,
Giuseppe
Rossi.
You know, inarguably, they do have cuisine on lock.
Yes.
So like perhaps and beautiful coastal views.
Right. Does Gigi Buffon have a sister? And is she single?
So this was a great MLS segment, guys.
I think I don't know what we did with MLS. I don't think we answered our question at all. But I think we saw the next 10 years of men's
I think we
team.
Got like, the U.S.
So
national
we
team.
Should just call everyone in from U.S. soccer. Here's our proposal.
Yeah. Berhalter, you're thinking about this the wrong way.
To the point that like they have been sorting through these sort of dual national potentials for the men's side.
For sure.
I feel like it's been out of necessity, or at least the perception of those who are scouting's necessity.
I think
whereas
the ones who
the
stayed
side,
on the team, though, they've made big money. Like
side,
a Timmy Chandler.
Think about it this way. The women's side has had the opposite effect, where you've had women that have essentially emigrated to the States. So think about Sydney LaRue had come from Canada to the States at a much younger age because she wanted the potential to play for a successful national team. So I feel like we had the inverse for the women's side, whereas now we're sort of going out. We haven't had that for the women's side.
Sure.
The men's side, I think that perception, it's good, right? Like there's data to support that that's been beneficial to the side. But I don't think that's the be-all, end-all.
No, it's not the be-all, end-all. But if you think, I don't know, that Europe is sending their men here to try to make women's national team players for their nations, don't think I don't know.
We see you, Brits. Right?
We know what you're trying. You better work on your riz.
So going back over to Europe, we had a big result in the Bundesliga over the weekend where Dortmund beat Bayern 2-0. And according to Thomas Tuchel, the league title race is officially over. He's conceded that Bayern are not going to win the league this year. I mean, what do you guys make of a manager saying that in the middle of the season? He's probably right, but also I just feel like it's very, very defeatist.
Well, don't forget, a couple weeks ago he said he's not coming back.
Yeah, I guess
so
he doesn't
now
really...
he's spitting pure truth.
The fact that he said, and I quote, "I have no hope anymore." Like, I'm wondering, like, if this is like
Matt Emo.
Like, is this just specifically to the football, or like, what's going on at home?
Right. Are you okay? He's just like, my life in two pieces.
Thomas Tuchel needs a hug, bro.
I don't know. I feel like there's, to an extent, like, you need to be realistic, but I don't think it's a necessity to go as far as like deflating your entire squad's balloon. Like, you still have to play. Like, mm-hmm.
We've talked about this on the show before, but Christian was talking to a player, or maybe he heard this in an interview, and they were like, well, the season's over, you're not making the playoffs, an MLS player, so you have nothing to play for. And he was like, to you,
right,
there's still my pride. So there is that. But
exactly,
I think
you're never setting foot and presenting yourself out on field and saying, eh, you know what, whatever. Because you know what, whether you're content at your club or not, it's either a showcase for another club to make a move, right? But also, like, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing to play poorly. If you've never felt that awful, crushing feeling of, like, wanting to sub yourself off and, like, you played like shit, I don't know how to explain. You're going to think about it for weeks.
Think about Kingsley Coman, okay? And by the way, just for full coverage or full context, he was asked about the title chase, and he said it's over. Mm-hmm. Just give it to Bayern, Bayer Leverkusen, who, again, are 13 points ahead.
Who, quite frankly, have had a remarkable season, possibly a once-in-a-lifetime
season. So far, again, they've gone 27 matches without a loss, all 27 matches, 23 wins and 4 draws. But when it comes in particular to Bayern Munich, you know, the name Harry Kane comes to mind, who's had a successful season so far, but has been knocked out of every potential trophy, which is why he went there, besides Champions League. And I think of one player in particular, Kingsley Coman. There's something special about Kingsley Coman's career. I don't know if you know this. He has won a trophy every single year of his career.
Not just a trophy, the league title.
He's won the league title every single year of his career, except one. The one with Harry Kane. Now,
maybe Harry Kane is potentially
the mush.
Yeah,
he's the mush.
He maybe needs to consult some brujas and shaman.
He's got
to
put
maybe
chicken
a few
bones.
Strigas. Like, cover the full multicultural witches and
get them all.
Yeah,
a couple Jesus candles lit. You know what I mean? We got to do it all because this is rough for Bayern Munich. And Bayern Munich is seemingly are going to miss out on the Xabi Alonso hire. Mm-hmm. All signs point to him staying at Bayer Leverkusen.
Yeah, and you know what? Xabi shouldn't want to leave. I think that...
I disagree.
This is a good debate, actually. What do you think he should... Because I agree with you, Christine. I think he should stay.
I think he's done something remarkable and...
Yes, agreed.
I think that he could build something from this.
But here's the problem. And I get, look, Xabi Alonso went and, you know, he coached at Real Sociedad B. He didn't have to. He had other options. I think Mönchengladbach were interested. And he decided, nope, I want to make sure I'm good at what I'm doing. And he's presumably doing the same thing because I get that he's a little bit worried about taking over a club like Bayern Munich where the pressure is going to be immediate. And you have to understand how to manage a club that's both playing domestically and internationally at the level of Champions League, which he hasn't had to do with Bayer Leverkusen. Mm-hmm. Yes, Europa is difficult, but again, Champions League presents a much more difficult challenge. So I kind of like that he's pragmatic, that he's taking his time, that he doesn't feel the pressure to make a move immediate. We saw that how that didn't work out for like a Graham Potter, for instance.
For sure.
Who has been out of a job since he's been sacked at Chelsea, which was how long ago?
Over a year now.
It feels like decades. Absolutely.
Although a lot has happened with Chelsea.
I get fans and I get people who work in our space, whatever you want to call it, pundit or just personalities within the soccer space, I get that what makes immediate sense to us is if Liverpool call, if Real Madrid call, if Bayern Munich call, you answer the phone, you take that job, you may not get that opportunity moving forward. I respect a coach who says, nah, I will have that opportunity and maybe even a better opportunity in Real Madrid in 2 years when Ancelotti leaves, and I'll prepare myself the best I can for that, knowing there's a chance maybe that doesn't happen. I kind of respect that. That's where I come from. That's called putting your balls on the table.
Listen, I'm not the most, I'd say, moderately risk-averse person. Mm-hmm. And if I'm Xavi, I'm staying. And I'm staying because, one, he's starting to make his bones and prove himself. But also, he is such a new manager, right? So, like, let's say he does this season, right? It's done, right? He wins the league. It's even more challenging as someone who's reached that pinnacle of success now and you've proven yourself to do it again. Mm-hmm. And so it's still new terrain to him, right? Because how do you replicate? Because statistically, things are not in your favor, right? Granted, right. Bundesliga a little bit wonky because the competition, I'd say, is more compact and it's a little bit more predictable in terms of who can and will win the league.
Right.
All right, is one thing that
but
I'll
say.
But
do you think Bayern Munich are going to come back weaker next year? And do you think you're going to get the budget at Bayer Leverkusen to bring this team up to the next level? Are you even able to, based on the sponsorship money you have coming in, your partnership, your endorsements coming in, so that you can spend to that level and not trigger some type of UEFA financial fair play? I don't think so.
I think that it presents him with a new challenge, but with his hands less tied.
To the detriment of his future, though.
I don't think it'll be to the detriment of his future, because obviously anyone in consideration of hiring him as a future manager is going to take all of these things into consideration. You know, what is it
that
But
you would agree
him...
that the buzz can dwindle a little bit. Yes, a smart sporting director
but
who's
willing
to put his balls on the line and say, I'm going to hire someone who maybe has had a lackluster two seasons after going invincible because I see that there were some issues there. That's going to have to be someone who's willing to put their career on the line.
Yes, for sure. But with that being said, I think that with him carving out this space of his own, it creates an identity for him as a manager where you know what you're getting, right? That product is now neatly packaged.
Right.
You understand the parameters of his understanding, what he excels at. It mitigates a lot of the variables that would say like, oh, well, we're not sure. You want fewer question marks when you make these big hires. And I think that it also makes him more attractive because if you want a particular style of play, you know that his identity comes with a very specific product.
Right.
And so I don't think he's had that time yet to sort of fully display that for the rest of the world to see. But I think that what he's built here, and if he can replicate that in some way, shape, or form,
for sure,
especially in the face of now people know it's coming, right? He loses the element of surprise next season.
Absolutely.
Because everybody knows who he is
Absolutely.
And what he's doing, right? So can you still do this? Can you see success despite all of that now with people knowing who you are, your name, what your style of play is, what you're capable of doing with your players? And if can you rise to that challenge? I think it presents a different frontier for him, but I do think that he'll be attractive to other leagues going forward.
So one point I want to make about Xabi Alonso. He has a 67% win percentage as the manager of Bayer Leverkusen. This is extending into the tail end of the last season. And he has a points per match of 2.2. That's how much it took. And obviously it'd be a little bit higher if we could only do this season. That's how hard it is to win Bundesliga. Is he going to do that with a Bayern Munich who you know? And Seb, he's my homie. I wish I knew his name. He works for.
You're
friends with Seb Blatter?
Seb Safford Bloor. You know, it's the Bloor. When he added the Bloor, man, it really ruined it for me. And that's why I was like, Seb Blatter? Seb Safford Bloor. He covers Bundesliga for The Athletic. And he was very clear about the media, the footballing media in Germany is Bayern Munich. It's not, it's, if Bayer Leverkusen beats Bayern Munich, it's Bayern Munich lost to let Bayer Leverkusen. It's not the other way around. Everything that happens in the media, it's 90% talking about Bayern Munich, and then everyone else fits into that 10%. You're asking a lot of a manager. And look, and the fact that he's doing this, I'm simply saying, I know you might stay. Mike, you might stay. I probably wouldn't stay. I'd probably be like, yo, let me get that check right now so that I could at least have this, because who knows if this falls apart tomorrow. That's why I don't begrudge players when they make a big money move, because I'm like, bro, you can blow out your knee tomorrow.
I feel like I diverge a little bit between my opinions on manager and player.
Right.
Players.
Because you have the romantic vision of a manager, right? The omnipotent manager for the club.
No, but I think that there are a lot of young managers, and Xavi is. He's only 42. That you do need to prove yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And I feel like your moves increase in value and also stature incrementally, as they should. But, like, at least figure out what your small planet holds before you try to take over a whole solar system.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right? So...
Meanwhile, I'm like, give me the biggest planet.
Yeah, so but in terms of players, I will always, always, always say, if you can manage to make more money and you're more valued at another club, go.
Right.
Because your career is far more finite. You don't know what tomorrow brings.
Also true.
Season-ending injuries, career-ending injuries.
However long you want.
You could fall out of favor with your squad and you may never see another playing minute. Always do what is in your best interest. And that's very, very hard. Not everybody's going to be a franchise player. That's the reality, right? They're very far and few between. But in terms of managers, I think that, yes, you should stay the course and try to hold it down to the extent that you can prove that there will be a foreseeable legacy of success, not just this encapsulated one moment that comes and goes.
I also think, for what it's worth, the two jobs that he was potentially rumored to join, Liverpool and Bayern, are going to be very difficult jobs to do next season. And if he is really waiting for Real Madrid, which is what I think everybody's kind of assuming at this point, do you really want to jump into something that might not be as strong as it once was? Jurgen Klopp's going to leave a huge vacuum at Liverpool. Bayern's clearly a mess right now. Do you really want to leave something that you know works take something that you don't really know just because it's more money?
One thing I'll say, and this is what I said about Mbappe, probably shouldn't go to Real Madrid, even though I can't wait to see what this looks like.
It's going to be so crazy.
I have this small, just eerie feeling that it's going to be an error.
Really?
I'm
just looking. I'm excited. I'm not a Real Madrid fan. But I will be watching most of those games because
I love him. Good or bad. I think he's super talented. I feel like every club has its own individual problems, and sometimes they're not evident on the surface level.
Right. Mm-hmm. To me, the reason I said why maybe he shouldn't go is because if you win Champions League with Real Madrid, okay, you're one of many people who've done that. If you win Champions League at, say, random team for no obvious reasons, Arsenal, right? Maybe he goes Arsenal. If you win Champions League, Arsenal,
are you manifesting?
You get a statue, Mbappe.
That's true.
Like right now, Xabi Alonso is doing what I'm suggesting Mbappe should have done, which is stay at the club where you are now a legend. You've won, presumably, again, nothing is set in stone yet, but with 13 points to go, with 13 points and a little less than a third of a season to go, I'm going to sit here and say you've won this league. Thomas Tuchel said it himself. Mm-hmm. It's over. You now deserve to have a statue at the end of that run, whether it's tomorrow, the day after the league is done, or whether it's in three more years. You deserve a statue. You've done something that no other Bayer Leverkusen manager has done. I'm almost 90% sure they've never won.
Neverkusen, that's what they call them. Yeah, Neverkusen.
I just want to make sure it wasn't like some DFB Pokal or something that I was referencing. they haven't won it before. So now all of a sudden, you're the guy to bring them that. To try to do that again. You know, it reminds me of the old trick that teachers used to pull of like everybody starts the year with an A. You know, now you have to keep it. You know how hard that is?
Mm-hmm.
That's the same thing that Xabi Alonso is going to do next season is he's going to have to find a way to completely find. You mentioned these shining moments. You're going to have to find lightning in the bottle twice.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about a Bayern Munich that's like, bro, we don't want to lose sponsors. We don't want sponsors to shift over. We don't want ad revenue to shift over. So we have to completely retool with the most amount of money we can potentially spend without getting in trouble. We have to completely retool to win this league again. They're going to come for your neck. It's going to be very difficult.
I mean, even if he would have, or I mean, I feel like it's kind of off the table at this point, but even if he would have decided that was the right route to go, like, Bayern come with their own problems, right?
Yes,
like, that's a whole other albatross to hang upon his neck.
Right.
In terms of the expectations are there, right? No matter what, the expectations are there because, you know, you're going to another big club. I just think that when you've sort of started to carve out this sort of community like he has in Leverkusen, that has been beneficial both for the players, for him, for the fans, and everything across the board. Like, why wouldn't you want to stay where you're sort of loved? Even if it's for the moment, right? Yeah, the expectations are there. Mm-hmm. But now you're having to start over from scratch again with Bayern. Now, irrespective of how much money they want to throw at you, like, that doesn't change that the matter at hand is, like, you still need to be the best manager that you can be to this team, to these players.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd say, like, outside of seeing players there that you absolutely are, like, you know, bucket list I want to work with, that would probably be my other intangible grab. That would be like, oh, yeah, I don't know that I'll ever get to manage this group of talent again. And that would be my big draw.
Hmm. So if it was Greg Berhalter, Jurgen Klopp, or Xabi Alonso? Who do you take for the men's national?
I feel like Klopp.
Xabi
Alonso.
I would go
okay.
Klopp.
Klopp?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe for national team. I'll switch.
Klopp? I feel like he's got the right combination of, let's move some ass and also like good dad energy.
Yeah,
right.
Like he knows when to kind of kiss you, when to smack you.
Right.
And I think that especially with the talent pool that we have, yeah. I think that he would be the best, just like player manager, where he could absolutely get the best out of them.
Yeah, and he coached Gio and Pulisic, so Klopp.
Dun, 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 dun,
Klopp
dun, dun,
it is.
Can we? Dear Klopp.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's get this going.
Can we just send him a postcard?
Yeah. How long of a break do you need?
Yeah. Why don't we just call Klopp up?
So we got some fisticuffs, guys. There was some action on the sidelines. Mm. Emma Hayden, women's soccer, too. Not the fake fights that we see in men's soccer. This was legit. We got Emma Hayes against the Arsenal manager. I forget his name. I don't know how to pronounce
Jonas
it.
Jonas Eidevall.
Jonas right. Eidevall. I couldn't pronounce it.
The winner of the Conti Cup 2 years in a row, by
the way.
what do you guys make? Emma Hayes. Don't mess with her, bro.
She What's specifically beef? Said don't she's like, what was it, male aggression?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think, to me, the point, and we talked a lot about the national teams, but as an Arsenal fan, I'm like, yo, leave my coach alone. But also, I'm like, yo, this is good for the women's national team, man. This is the energy I need to see on the U.S. women's national team.
Yeah, I mean, I love Emma.
Right.
I love her.
This comes with the territory of Emma, right? Yeah,
as a tactician, I love her. Right. As a personality, I love her. I think that she brings a lot of good energy. She's already spoken out on a number of things, including some of the intermingling of, like, players and right. other players and coaches mm-hmm. and other staff, which... 1,000%. Like, if you want to be legitimized, like, there shouldn't right. be this intermingling of people where there's all of these conflicts
right.
in the sport if you want to be taken seriously. But
I'm wildly against coach and player or someone from the coaching staff yeah. or the team staff and player, I could care less.
I don't necessarily agree. I think it changes the dynamic,
yeah.
especially if your player's on the same freaking team.
Right. Imagine how hard you'll play for someone. Though. You know what I mean?
Maybe, or, you know, like, I'm sorry, but, like, football in general is clicky.
Yeah.
So, like, the last thing you want is your ex playing on your team
right.
and then having, you know, or they get iced out, they're not getting minutes. It's too much of a ball of wax to want to enter into unless you're like, oh, yeah, I'm definitely marrying this person. And
right.
at that point, like, Godspeed.
Doesn't relieve the ball of wax.
No, not really, right? Because then it's like, do you want to be arguing over who
right.
didn't do the laundry this week while
right,
you're
right.
trying to, you know, do a little tiki-taka
right.
practice? But... As
I'm not
aside,
passing you the ball because you know what you did.
Yeah.
And the other person's like, I don't know what I did. If someone could tell me what I
yeah,
did.
Yeah, with Conti Cup, though, I mean, you know, Jonas wandered outside of the technical area, which, okay, fine, like, card that.
Uh-huh.
That's warranted, right? Cuthbert had come over. He was gesticulating at a distance at her. I don't know why she ran over. She didn't really have to, which, like, led to an exchange of words. Which, again, like, if I were a manager, I'd be annoyed by that, too. Like, why are you talking to my player?
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that I have to say here that I do disagree with is, like, you should never push another person, ever. I don't care if it's a man or a woman, especially in a professional setting.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There should not be any physical altercation, even if you think that he was exhibiting... male aggression.
She should have done it. Was the Conte Cup. She should have done the Conte handshake with two.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Remember
yeah.
that when they were like yes. yanking yeah, each other's yeah, arms? Yeah. I know they're spelled differently, guys. I'm not letting go of you.
But,
like,
yeah,
we're gonna,
so,
this is
I
the
mean,
most professional handshake of all time.
For me, like, yeah, she was in the wrong for that. You should never push an approaching coach.
But don't we,
he
don't
was
we
going
like,
to shake hands, and she pushed him, like,
yeah.
outwardly pushed him.
She said something like, you know what you did, something along
right.
those lines.
You know,
but
and
don't
then
you
shook
like
her
the fact that she
kind
of, like, stood on business, though, that she was the aggressor?
There's a way to do that, and she could have easily addressed that
right.
in post, which she kind of did.
She did either way.
But
yeah.
you don't need to assault anybody ever. Like,
yeah,
it's
yeah,
my
yeah.
thing. It's like, do not touch, do not
True.
Lay a finger.
Is a push
if you
assault?
Wanna, if you want to walk by somebody and be like, I'm not shaking your hand, and be like,
right.
that wasn't... don't talk to my players.
Oh, imagine
she
did one of these joints.
Like yeah, little that kid. I can get behind. Like,
little
fine,
kid to Gerard,
absolutely.
Just
yeah,
like that.
Yeah,
but also, like,
gotcha, sucker.
I feel like we don't have enough of the information involved in the situation.
And it feels like we never will,
assess,
for
right,
sure.
To
for
assess
sure.
it as male aggression or not, because quite frankly, like, you see that out of other female coaches too.
Right.
Where it's like, you wouldn't label it female aggression. And I'm like, no, man, like, that just comes with the turf, right? Like, that's part of the game. Like, Casey Stoney with her cooler incident, right?
Right,
where she was like, I didn't do anything, and she kicked the ball away,
right.
Like, it's shithousery, and like, you're not going to label that otherwise, but yeah, is that annoying to another coach in a game that they're trying to win? Of course.
Right. I don't know, I get the point of don't ever assault anyone, and I hate to yeah. now say but but I don't think a very light push, more of like a kind of, it was almost like the hand version of a shoulder check while someone's walking by. Yeah, I guess that's you know, assault, if you will.
It's a no-no.
I think I can fight
it. It's a no-no. You don't do it.
You
don't do it.
I think in a court of law I can fight it.
Unless you're a sparring partner or you're in a boxing ring, like, you don't hit somebody.
No, you're right. You are right. Yes, you do not hit anyone. But also, I like that she did do that, you know? I just, there's something about the you can't intimidate me way she went back at him kind of made me, even again, lost, and I'm an Arsenal fan, I'm glad Emma Hayes' team lost. It ruins the opportunity for the quadruple in her last season at Chelsea. So, for all the things, as an Arsenal supporter, I was very happy to see. I was very happy to see Lee Williamson lift another trophy. Mm-hmm. Again, just one of my favorite players in general. Doesn't matter, man, woman, child, I don't care. Just one of my favorite human beings that plays football. But at the same time, I'm like, nah, I kind of get where Emma Hayes is coming from. And I think that there's Vlatko's energy has always been fun stepdad. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I think he was a decent player manager, and they all appreciated him
yeah.
for sure.
No,
but
the players
loved
him, and we saw that in the documentary.
Which is also detrimental to
That's what
sometimes
I'm talking about.
You, it's almost like
you may love Emma
like
Hayes, but you're going to fear her first.
Right, like the mom that like is your friend, but you're like, no, like, I need you to be the mom, not my friend.
Not the cool mom.
Right, like, and yes, I think that that's something good.
Right.
Outside of this incident, like, this incident to me is so stupid.
It's also stupid because
you know what? Like, it's part of the game, in my opinion, objectively. Like, yeah, I'd have all, like, maybe he should have just, like, not said a word to Cuthbert when she ran over.
Right.
But, like, he was just trying to get them to not swap out the ball. That's
right.
What this whole interaction started.
It was about
over,
one ball,
okay?
Right?
Right, because they agreed beforehand that they would not be doing that, which, okay, that's in adherence to the rules of the game agreed upon. Cool. Now, the fact that she assessed it as something else, I do think it's unfair to call it male aggression. I just think it's something that played out during the game, and it was a difference in managers' opinions, and it didn't need to escalate to what it did at the end, right?
Right.
Like, just don't shake his hand. Yeah. And then also, yes, absolutely, if you want to douse him in gasoline in post when you're doing your pressers, have at it.
How long has it been since you've been on Kooligans? Because you brought facts and reason.
I know, I'm so sorry.
And I'm like, what are you doing, Koo?
She hasn't done the show with you in a while.
That's true.
All of Christian.
Oh, I bet you when Christian's here, it's a lot of, yes, you're right, let me pull up a spreadsheet. Meanwhile, I'm like, look at this gif, you know?
Like, just like, fight.
You know what I think when Christian's here, he'll like pull up the data, and I just get to be goofy. And I'm like,
That's you're taking Christian's
that's
role for this episode.
Yeah, we should have swapped seats.
Maybe that's
we
it.
Should have made you in the Christian role so I could just be dumb as I'm going to continue to be forever. the one thing I do want to bring up about this game is Freedom Adam collapsing. All signs point to her being better.
All signs point to her recovering.
Yeah, I don't want to say okay.
She was administered oxygen on the sideline, which you never want to see a player get.
What a scary moment that is.
That's horrifying.
Were you watching the game? I happened to be watching the Bolton match because Stu Holden made me want to watch Bolton matches. But when Fabrice Muamba collapsed on the pitch, Nigel Riakoker was in that game playing for Bolton. I didn't realize that.
I would have been terrified. I mean, it was terrifying from the perspective of a spectator, but having
horrific.
To be in that game and worrying about one of your friends and teammates.
Horrific.
I feel like none of the instances in which somebody's gone down like that in a really traumatic fashion,
right?
They're burned into my brain forever.
Yeah,
I will never forget them.
You know what it is? It's, for me, the thing that I remember most about the Fabrice Muamba situation, because the player went down, my first instinct is, oh, he pulled a hammy or something, because... But then I remember he, like, collapsed in a way you don't normally see players. Players usually brace themselves, and he really couldn't. And then the silence from the announcer and the change of tone mm-hmm. from the commentator talking about like, oh no, mm-hmm. he's gone down. And it happened to be like, I think it was like the first match where they had the defibrillators. Like the very first. Something about that was very significant about the defibrillators and it saved his life. So when Frida goes down, obviously you hold your breath in that moment.
Yeah. I still have for more recent things, just like Christian Erickson.
Yeah, never. That
one in particular.
I have not been able to get over that to the point that even when I see him playing, I have this mm-hmm. this weird tentativeness about just it's I'm scared.
Yeah.
And so yeah, you saw her go down and it was like, oh my God,
super scary.
No contact. You wonder what's going on. The good news is that she traveled home with the team. Right. I hope, obviously, I'm sure that they've taken her to hospital, despite the fact that in the in-between she didn't, just to get rechecked out. I hope that she is on her
Take
way
her to, the
to
hospital.
A full recovery, and they figure out what caused that. I hope it was just, you know, like salt, something, potassium imbalance, anything that's not actually cardiac or pulmonary related.
And obviously, you know, please, you know, I would love to see Frida Menom get back on the pitch, but as long as you're able to and you're healthy and some of these players take care of themselves. And the reason I brought this up is, you know, there's better than most. Obviously, you've covered the women's game and stuff. It only feels like only in the last few years that women have been allowed, female athletes in particular in European soccer, have been allowed to treat their bodies as if they need recovery. Mm-hmm. It feels like in previous seasons, they've been forced to do, especially women's national team players, long tours, you know, somewhat meaningless competitions, like small little tournaments, so that they can, you know, do these sort of promotional tours around and help build revenue. And you know, for a lot of the players in the WSL, you know, this wasn't fully pro not that many years ago, where some of these players had to play in other leagues, like WNBA players have had to do, mm-hmm. you know, go to Russia and stuff. So never really fully getting that recovery, you know, putting your body on the line, playing through injuries because you don't want to lose your spot. And we're starting to see. So I want to be able to, I want to say to Frida Menom, like, I hope the game
take
is
the
in
time.
A place, yeah, where you can take that time and you don't fear that your spot won't be there for you or that you won't be able to get back into the game the way you were because an incredible player, just an incredible player for Arsenal. Congratulations on the Conte Cup. But also, you're a human being. We need you on this planet. So please, take a moment.
Very well said.
Thank you. This has been a great episode. Christine, thank you so much.
I'm so sorry for talking facts and all
that. No. I'll
bring more nonsense next time.
I bet you the fans appreciate it.
I'm out of practice playing goal-ins. I'll do better.
Well, someone the other day commented on one of our posts, you guys never talk about the games. Like, I think this episode, they'll be satisfied.
Their actual comment was like, it's just jokes. And we're like, yeah, that's the point, you know? But thank you so much for hanging out with us, Coop. You always bring the goods every time
Queen
you're here.
Queen of Blangola.
Love you
Queen
guys.
Of Blangola,
including
first
Miguelito.
And foremost. You can catch you on all types of CBS content and all over the place. What are you doing next? Do you know what you're doing next?
I'll be on Morning Footy on Friday.
Morning Footy on Friday. Hey, you're replacing me.
Footy Kit Friday.
Let's
go.
So
if you do not wear your finest, I take it as a glaring insult.
Yes. And by the way, we seem to get a lot more Footy Kit Friday submissions when you bring it up on social media. So everybody, step your game up. Coupo's
Hashtag asking. Footy Kit Friday. Let's go.
Nobody wants to let Coupo down. I myself, you'll see where I'm at at the end of this week, why I can't be there on Friday. But I've had a blast. Thank you to everyone who's reached out and told us positive and great comments and feedback.
Make sure to keep commenting, like us, follow, subscribe, do everything you got to do. Download the episodes.
Hit that subscribe button. Follow on every social media. And if you can, if you happen to be watching this on YouTube right now, hit that like button. You have no idea how much that helps us.
Subscribe,
I'm not even asking you to subscribe. You don't even have to subscribe, buddy. Hit
Smash
the
like
button.
But subscribe also.
Yeah.
Subscribe
only
too.
Subscribe if you're going to watch because it hurts us if you don't. So hit the like button regardless of what you're going to do. That really helps us a ton. So thank you to everybody who subscribed. Thank you to everybody who follows. Thank you to everyone who listens. We absolutely love you guys. Do not forget, we have a Patreon if you want to join that. Shouts to Gully Squad. Please go do that. Go to our website, SoccerCooligans.com, and you'll see all that. Also, congratulations and happy first birthday to Mateo Polanco, everybody.
Shout out, Mateo.
Hey,
felicidades,
birthday.
Little guy.
Absolutely. And let me tell you, I held the baby. I held this.
I'm so proud of you.
I held this young man.
This is growth.
And I thought, let me make it laugh. So I went, and it touched my tongue.
Did you say it? Are you calling Mateo?
Mateo touched my tongue.
Yeah.
I meant it as in the child.
You know, Alexis is still coming into his own as like the fun tío.
Yeah. Much better once you can able walk. And yeah, I felt like, should I go gargle right now? I'm such a germaphobe. But the cool thing was the baby had just eaten sugar for the first time. It just ate the icing on a cupcake, so his hands were dirty. So the mom, Helene, went to wash the baby's hands. So I got the baby post-hand wash. So there's a higher likelihood that I'm going to be okay.
Yeah, I think
you're going to be okay. You'll be fine. Don't worry.
You're from Newark, man.
I was freaking out.
Like, you've definitely...
We don't do germs in Newark. It's nothing.
Even
but...
the germs are afraid to come to Newark.
Like, I'll survive anything, yeah. But not the germs.
Yo, germs know not to step foot in my domicile. I don't know if I said that correctly. But thank you, everybody, for listening. You guys have been absolutely amazing.
Back on Thursday. Guys, buddy.
See you then. Love you guys.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.